Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, where we believe that a bad podcast is better than no podcast. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hi, Corey.
This week, we examine what exactly are the consequences if the UK leaves the EU without a trade deal. So, we have spent 18 months basically in our bunker trying to explain and talk about Brexit. And the two things that seem to have been quite clear from the start, Steve, are one, the UK getting no deal with the EU would be absolutely terribly bad.
Indeed.
The second one is that the UK government has done absolutely no preparation at all for there being no deal.
Very true. In fact, technically two different governments have completely failed to do this, given that Theresa May's government is very different to David Cameron and George Osborne's.
I remember David Cameron.
I know. The long, long ago, where the Tories at least had a semblance of being centrist.
Centrist dads. My first question then is, why the hell is no deal even being contemplated at the moment?
Long and short of it, internal Tory party politics. So much of what we seem to be doing in terms of positioning ourselves with the EU is all about either Theresa May trying to shore up her own position or various wannabe prime ministers and Tory party leaders trying to position themselves to take advantage of the fact that Theresa May is a very weak prime minister. Everything that seems to be happening is being done for the internal audience of the Conservative Party membership, rather than being done for what's actually the good of the country.
Yeah, that's so depressing. I can't even think of a response to that. That's just, it's both true and depressing. The whole point of a Brexit deal is having to sort out the really boring, niggly things like checks at customs or flights. The kind of stuff that wasn't talked about in the referendum campaign at all.
Because everybody would switch off. Because they are very, very boring.
And also, I suppose, that Project Fear narrative. If the Remain campaign had said, if you vote Leave, then flights won't come in and out of the UK from the EU.
It would just be, you'd laugh, like, even I would have laughed that off as preposterous.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's sheer Project Fear.
Yeah.
Except,
it's not hilarious. Not necessarily wrong.
No. So, yeah, so Britain is part of the Open Skies Agreement. The European Open Skies Agreement. If Britain leaves the EU in 2019 without a deal, that is no longer in effect and flights won't be able to go in or out of the UK from the EU.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what you'll probably find is that even if we do end up with a deal across the short term, you're still probably going to see a decrease in the number of flights coming in and out of the UK to Europe, because the uncertainty that we're seeing over Britain's involvement in these sorts of programmes means that, you know, the airlines, which are businesses at the end of the day, need to limit their exposure to potential damage. And the safest way to do that is to decrease the amount of flights that are coming in and out of the UK and instead put their resources into areas where they're going to be stable.
And that might happen quite quickly because airline schedules are ones which they are sorted quite far off in advance. Mm-hmm. And it's that's one of the main problems with the British government's chaotic approach to Brexit. It's almost the threat of no deal is stronger than the execution. Obviously, it would be very, very bad if there was no deal. But the fact that it's even looking like there might not be a deal means businesses are either, as you say, having to change the products they're offering, like the airlines are, or maybe having to relocate from Britain altogether because of the threat of no deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just as a kind of a classic example, I work for a digital marketing agency and, you know, we used to do quite a fair bit of business with European companies. We still do a reasonable amount, but our areas of expansion and targeting aren't Europe anymore. We're now looking to the United States because we know what's going to be happening there in that relationship, which pretty much going to stay the same. An inability of us to be able to fly easily to Europe without a need for visas, without a need for forking out loads on bureaucracy, means that it's not as feasible for us to do that anymore.
I suppose similarly, say pharmaceutical companies would be another area where if there was no deal, pharmaceutical companies wouldn't be able to have their products licensed for use elsewhere in the EU. So they would have to look for to the US as well, which would probably cripple the UK pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, the UK pharmaceutical industry would have two options. Either don't sell to the EU, not really an option, or position themselves in some way so that they can get that ability to sell in the EU through the licensing or whatever, which, you know, I'm almost certain there will be ways they can do it. US pharmaceuticals do sell in the EU, but it's, again, it's that extra layer of bureaucracy that, that a company has to go through just to maintain their current position, which is going to take up time and business resources of those companies, which could be spent on expanding the business rather than just trying to keep it stable.
Well, quite. One of the things that is true about the British economy is that it has an issue with productivity. Now, there are many, many reasons for that, and that's worth another episode in itself. However, I cannot see how British productivity is going to be improved with all of this wasted space. That half, most of this is going to be wasted one way or another, really, all this preparation.
Pretty much, yeah. There's productivity, I would expect, actually, to take a further hit, which, given it's not in a strong position currently, is has the potential to be disastrous.
Now, I suppose if there is no deal and Britain drops out of the EU straight away without a deal, there are probably two main things that would be particularly obvious, I suppose. One of them is in terms of customs checks on ports, and the other one is the Northern Ireland border. That is symptomatic of the fact we would not be part of the customs union, and so any British exports going into the EU would have to be checked before they were there. So you would have huge backlogs at British ports where goods were being checked, and goods would have to be checked as well over the Northern Ireland border. And in fact, in one of the government papers, which is meant to be the British government position if there was no deal, what they say about the Northern Ireland border is that the nature of the border clearly means that all sides must aim for agreed reciprocal solutions. But an agreed solution is another word for a deal. So even in the government's own paper for preparing for no deal says that we need a deal.
Yeah, I mean, the Northern Ireland border with the Republic is kind of a classic example of so many of the issues that we're going to potentially have in terms of not being inside the customs union. There are businesses in the Republic of Ireland which will produce a load of stuff which will then get sent up to Northern Ireland for processing or packaging. They will then get sent back down to the Republic of Ireland, to Dublin, say, for something else to happen to it as part of the business process, and then get sent back up to Northern Ireland for distribution, where they'll then get put on a ship or get put on a plane to go somewhere else. I think Guinness has a process that's quite similar to that, from what I remember reading, and it has the potential to just absolutely severely damage an awful lot of the economy of Northern Ireland. They just don't quite seem to have realised the complexity of the Irish border situation. And this is just when we're talking pure economics, never mind the potential symbolic significance of that border going up between the Republic and Northern Ireland again.
And that would be a breach of the Good Friday Agreement, wouldn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, which is, you know, an internationally validated treaty. It's such a complex mess. It beggars belief that we're having to have this conversation and actually delve into this, because there is no easy way out of this. To be quite honest, either one of two things happens. You have a hard border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, or Northern Irish people can't enter Britain without going through customs checks. That's the long and short of it. Any talks about IT systems or fancy get-arounds aren't going to work, because at some point you're going to have to make those checks.
And it's not just those businesses like Guinness you were talking about. You will have people working in the Republic of Ireland who work in Northern Ireland, who live in the Republic who work in Northern Ireland, and vice versa. The capacity for chaos is limitless.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's just the very basic facts of, even if you did somehow eke out a position where it was allowable under EU law for Northern Irish people to come into the Republic without having to go through checks or whatever, you then end up with the situation of, how do you enforce that? What's to stop me, just a merry Englishman, going to Belfast and hopping on a train then to get into the Republic? Or somebody going to Ireland, going into Belfast, and then getting into the UK. There's all kinds of potential issues.
And so if Britain isn't part of the single market or customs union, and there is no hard border, and as you say, you can travel freely, well, and goods can travel freely, yep, more importantly, someone is going to take that case to the European Court of Justice, and the European Court of Justice are going to say, rightly, that's not allowed.
Yep.
And there will be some sort of hard border. And yeah.
Yeah. Essentially, there's going to be a hard border. It's just a question of where it is. Do we put it in between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland? Or do we put it in between the entirety of Ireland and the rest of Britain? Either way, to be quite honest, I suspect you're laying the foundations for the reunification of Ireland.
The alternative to that hard... Again, this is... I mean, in this podcast is more about what would happen if there was no deal. I suppose the alternative to there being no border would be that Britain stays in the single market customs union in some form, in some sort of transitional deal. However,
delays the problem, does not solve it.
Quite. We haven't even really talked about the fact that food prices would go up. In fact, there's a whole podcast probably to be talked about the food industry and the agricultural industry on Brexit. But not only would UK export tariffs would be put on UK exports, so a lot of the farming industry and fisheries would be devastated. Also, there might be certain foodstuffs which are harder to get. The prices of those foodstuffs would increase.
One of the things that I've found particularly grating about certain Brexiteer arguments is when this kind of topic has been brought up, the argument has been, oh no, what we can just remember, we're not going to have tariffs. Because, you know, we're not going to be part of the single market, we're not going to be part of the customs union. We can just be properly free trading. We can just open up the country to the produce of the world. So we're not going to have these issues with food shortages. And to be honest, to a certain degree, that's probably right. You probably might have some shortages in some areas, but broadly speaking, you probably would end up roughly where we are now. The only issue is, if you open up the doors to the rest of the world's produce, oh, New Zealand lamb's coming in. Well, are we going to buy Welsh lamb or are we going to buy New Zealand lamb? Suddenly there's more competition. It's much more stringent competition from lots of different places in the world, which means British agriculture takes a hit in various forms, which means British goods take a hit in various forms. We then end up having an economic impact of that decision, which isn't necessarily beneficial overall, which causes inflation to rise, which then in turn causes food prices to go up. So really, not to be slightly apocalyptic, you probably are going to see some form of food price rises. It's just going to be a question of how much and what speed.
And if, as Theresa May would say, if you are food produce of the world, then you are food produce of nowhere.
Oh, clearly, yeah. Mm.
There's also Euratom as well. We said we're going to leave Euratom. Steve has his head in his hands at the moment, which I don't think I've said a pun, so it must be for a different reason.
It's just literally the only reason we're leaving Euratom is because it's got Europe in it. There's no logical reason to leave Euratom. It's just a...
What is Euratom?
Euratom is essentially an organisation which just is all about nuclear safety. It's about making sure that you've actually got access to expertise, access, and you're on top of what needs to be done to keep nuclear power stations safe and secure. That's its kind of core thing for the most part.
Will we still have to keep nuclear power stations safe after Brexit?
Probably, yes. Mm.
Okay. And so if we left Euratom...
We'd just be removing ourselves from a potential source of information, talent and knowledge.
And according to the Times, without some form of a membership of Euratom, the UK would not have procedures for operating nuclear power plants, which puts them at risk of being unable to continue their work.
Yep.
I can't.
It's not like we've just invested millions and millions and millions into Hinkley.
Well, thank heavens, because we look pretty bloody stupid if we
have. I know.
But the things we've talked about, a lot of them are just administrative issues, really. It's the boring bits of sovereignty. It is, are you part of this nuclear power industry? What happens to your border checks? All that sort of stuff. Which, as we said, didn't really come up in the referendum. It's a bit like going to university or growing up and getting your own house or something. You have the exciting bits, which are that you can buy your own food and you can go out and go to bed whenever you want, and that kind of stuff. But then you've got the boring bits, like making sure you've got enough milk in the house or making sure you've paid your council tax. We're looking at that bit. We're looking at the boring bits of that. And it's the bits that, if we're quite honest, a lot of the Brexiters, a lot of the Tory MPs who talk about it, they're not really interested in that kind of stuff. They're not really interested in the details.
No.
I mean, Dan Hannan will talk for hours and days about free trade and sovereignty and what it means. And then when you say, well, what about the Northern Ireland border? Oh, it's all right. We'll sort it out. We'll get something.
Yeah, well, there'll be a deal. They want to sell us BMWs and Mercedes-Benzes. Not how it works, Dan. Not at all.
No, all of the talk from the Tory MPs is about when you have debates on Brexit, they will ask about trade. And it's all about what goods and what money we get from the EU.
It's absolutely brilliant. So much of the pro-Brexit argument when it comes to the economics of it was all about that the EU is a rational actor, that because we do deals with them, they're going to be reciprocal because they want to continue doing well as well. Richard Thaler has just won the Nobel Prize for Economics for basically proving that people aren't rational actors, that they don't respond with rationally. So we have basically let people who don't even understand the basic concept of how humans work define one of the most complex international negotiations that has ever happened.
Do you think there's a chance that the EU might not act as a rational actor because we've been calling them idiots and bureaucrats and dictators for the best part of 30 years?
I think it's quite possible.
Mm. The other thing apparently is the WTO has done estimates where if there is no deal, they estimate that we will have 50% fewer goods trade with Europe and 62% fewer services traded with Europe. British industry would just collapse overnight and there'd be a massive depression, wouldn't there?
In effect, yeah. The vast majority of the British economy is the service sector in various forms. And yeah, for 63% of that to... Yeah, that would be disastrous. You would be talking mass unemployment.
Hmm. So let's end on an optimistic note. And let's have a think. Well, what could the government do to try and prepare for no deal? We have started stocking tinned food in the bunker.
Mm-hmm.
We can, because of the likely inflation, we can't really afford champagne anymore. We're stockpiling that white lightning in champagne bottles and hoping we'll have forgotten by 2020
what it was. Yeah.
Maybe it will improve. It will be a fine vintage. Chris Cook has done some quite interesting stuff on this, as have the Institute for Government. Just to paraphrase what they say needs to happen, one of them is that you basically... Because there would be customs checks in ports, you would need to buy actual space in ports for immigration officers to be. You'd need to have customs facilities and sanitary checks and actual space there. You therefore need to train, Chris Cook reckons, 3,000 to 5,000 more customs officers. And it would take a year to train those customs officers, which means we basically need to be training them now.
Yeah.
Also, we'd need to have, DEFRA would need to have more staffing at ports. The Institute for Government reckons we'd need even more regulatory bodies. We'd need more British, but it would be British red tape, not European red tape, so it's okay. But we'd need to replicate bodies which the EU has, like trade remedy, trade bodies, for instance. We'd also, and this is the best bit because we know how the British government is good at these, we'd need new IT systems. So we'd need IT systems to track animals going across borders, and a new customs IT system, and we'd have to set that IT system up, and we'd have to do that before Brexit because we'd need to know that it worked rather than just crashing in March 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're not even close to anywhere near that amount of prep.
No, we're not, and I've just done some quick back of the packet calculations, and just for the numbers that you said for the required number of new custom officers that we would need, taking the lower end of that, the 3,000, and quickly Googling what their average kind of salary is, or starts at around 20 grand, that costs 60 million.
£60 million a year.
Just for the staff. Never mind anything else. That's just the staff.
And the government IT system, I mean, on average, that costs about £48 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Is this coming out of the £350 million a week that we'd save? Or is that money going to go to the NHS on top of all of this?
This is one of those things, like whenever as part of the referendum campaign, people started talking about, actually, that's not a fair reflection of what the costs are. This is exactly what they meant. Yes, we might very well have paid £350 million a week in terms of what comes out of our bank balance and goes to the EU. But the reality is that there's just so many things which, in effect, we were saving money on in other areas, which weren't reflected in anything. Because even the response to that 350 million figure was, actually, when you look at the money they give us back in various forms, it drops down to like 160 million or whatever it was. But I can guarantee you, these sorts of costs weren't put into that figure. If you had, you'd have probably ended up with a much stronger thing, and it would have just been, oh, it's a couple of million a week. And for that couple of million a week, we get to fly to France whenever we want without having to get a visa.
Mm.
The true costs of leaving the EU aren't going to be insanely high. Heaven help us, because we do not have a government that is capable of dealing with it.
Well, no, and we're in the worst of both worlds, where we are threatening to walk out and have no deal,
yep,
but we're also not preparing for that scenario. The EU knows that we're not preparing for that scenario.
So therefore, the threat is meaningless.
Mm.
So we're just going to end up basically agreeing to whatever they want for the transition deal in the hope that buys us 2 extra years for us to get our act together in some form.
And that means that Nigel Farage is going to be Prime Minister on a wave of populist hatred, because we are going to end up paying a big divorce bill because we have to. This is the thing, isn't it? Is Brexit is a populist movement based on impossible promises. As if you have a government which in any way tries to go with the populism and go and try and get those impossible promises, then reality hits.
And it's not pretty.
No. Can we stop talking about this because it's too depressing?
Yeah, let's just end this.
Can we end on a dubious prediction then?
Oh, we always do so well at these.
So in the Friday Fizz a few weeks ago, it was a sort of prediction that I felt worried that we wouldn't have a deal. Do you think there will be a deal by March 2019?
No, because I think we're going to go into a transitional period where we will be in some form of transitional period at that point, at which point we've got until 2021, I think was the...
May 1st.
But based on May's timetable, that would take us to 2021. So my guess would be if you were going to have a deal struck in that period, you'd be probably looking at 2020. So I don't think in 2019 you'll have a deal. I think it'll be in 2020.
Mm, I would agree with that. I mean, if you think that it will need 6 months to be ratified, which means that you'd essentially need to have a deal sorted by this time next year, and probably before that,
yep,
there is not going to be a deal by then.
Yep.
Unless Britain completely caves in
to everything, yeah.
But I don't think that's politically possible for Theresa May and the Tories either. Hopefully there will be some sort of transition. I mean, they're talking about wanting a bespoke transition deal, which is also nuts, because it will probably take more than a year to come up with a bespoke transitional deal that anyone can agree to. So,
which would then have to, again, go through the entire same process that the actual deal will need to go through. The transitional deal will be, to be quite honest, you continue paying us money, you lose your seat at the table. That's exactly what it will be, and we'll take it, because, as we've been discussing, the alternative is nuts. And on that note...
So, if we haven't depressed you enough, you can find more of our uplifting, optimistic work at facebook.com/notenoughchampagne and notenoughchampagne.com. James Cram designed our logo. You can find him on Twitter at James Cram, and Dave Depper produced our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. I'm on Twitter at Paperback Rioter.
I'm at Centre Radical.
Happy plotting. The government is not prepping for no deal. Hang on. There's too many...
too many negatives.
There are not enough no negatives in that sentence. The government is not only... government's not preparing for no deal. I can't do this. Right.